A very warm welcome back to the CFG Talking About Leadership podcast. In the first episode, we looked at what leadership is and the importance of diversity in leadership. In this episode, we're going to dig a bit deeper into leadership from the finance function, looking at why finance professionals make great leaders. And we welcome back Judith Miller and Maggie Smith. Hello to both of you. Now, my first question is, you've both worked in the finance sector alongside charities and nonprofits for some years. But Judith, what is it about finance professionals that make great leaders?
Thanks, Emma. I think it's a really interesting question, isn't it? And we had a recruitment day at St Vincent yesterday, and I always welcome the candidates to the firm and to the day. And one of the things that I do talk about when we start the day is I always think, you know, we train chartered accountants and it's a fantastic grounding. And I don't think of it as an accountancy qualification. I think of it as a business qualification. And you can get under the bonnet effectively of how any organization works. But just going back to the introduction that I always make to the candidates who are always delighted to see, is that it's as much a set of technical skills that you're learning as a set of people skills that you're learning and how you engage people in the numbers. And I think the qualification is evolving to make sure that it does that. But it does have to have those two bits to it. We're not bean counters in that old-fashioned sense. And I think that the key thing that people who work in the finance arena bring are, and I'm going to use an expression that Kate Morris, who is an IFL alumni and works in the sector, she came and did one of our guest speaker slots some time ago now, and she used this expression that, of course, finance people within an organization, and auditors too, I'm an auditor, you sort of have an access all areas pass, and you get to look under the skin of every aspect of how the organization is working, and you have a deep understanding of what the levers are to achieve financial success. And obviously it's all about, you know, how do we allocate resources to have the maximum impact? And it's that understanding that you as a finance professional develop in terms of understanding the whole organization, you know, and this is why we see so many people with accountancy qualifications as CEOs in organizations. I think that would be my starting point of what the finance professional has to offer within an organization.
Thanks, Judith. That's really insightful. What's the response to that when those younger, well, those professionals who come to you and they're perhaps setting out first stages of their career, and you tell them it's not just about the technical skills, actually, you're here for a lot more than that. What's the response do you find normally?
I think some of them walking through the door get it. I do think that there is a perception that it's about spreadsheets and number crunching. And I do wonder whether that's more the non-accountant thinking about that than the accountant. I think maybe for those who haven't thought about it, I think it presents quite an exciting opportunity, actually. You know, this isn't just an aspect of how a business or a not-for-profit functions. It's how it functions just generally. But I think there's one thing about, you know, learning your stuff within a charity is that, you know, you've got this dual bottom line. You've got to make the numbers work. You might be not for profit, but you're also not for loss. The numbers have got to work, but you're delivering this impact, this social value. You know, you're delivering alongside your charitable objectives. So it's more challenging than dividends to your shareholders, as far as I'm concerned. And so I think that requirement to focus on the impact that your charity is having, that makes you as a finance professional need to engage much more broadly in what the organization is doing. So I think it's more challenging for sure, but it's much more rewarding and interesting, I think.
Absolutely. Maggie, as you're listening to what Judith's saying about those people who are coming into the profession, and in particular charity, obviously charity finance, you've worked with people perhaps who are slightly further on in their careers. What do you notice, if anything, and I hate to generalise, but what gives them the advantage? For Judith, it's that holistic view, those business skills, but do you see anything else?
No, I'm not sure I do see anything completely different. I think that is absolutely the standout. And I think it's underappreciated, not only by more junior staff, where I think it is underappreciated. It's that you don't know that what you've got is different from other people necessarily. So I think probably some finance colleagues can take it for granted because they don't realize that they've got privileged information, really, that not everybody does, and it allows them to see the organization as a whole rather than in their silo, which can very easily happen. In terms of senior level, it probably isn't as different as we might imagine. Again, not across the board, but certainly somebody asked me this yesterday actually about leadership, about the good leaders who don't accept that or haven't thought about themselves as leaders. And I think it probably rings true for finance people as well. Not only that moment of it's okay to call yourself a leader because you are, you shouldn't be embarrassed about that, but also that you've got that unique viewpoint across the piece that really probably only the chief exec has as well. Depends on the culture, depends on individuals, of course it does. But I think we underestimate the value of that. And certainly when I think of when, before I was doing this work, when I worked in a charity myself, there for 9 years, and had three different finance CFOs in that time. And the one absolutely who changed my working life was the one who didn't treat me like an idiot because I wasn't an accountant. And I also remember one of our speakers, Paula Laird from WaterAid, using the phrase, "It's not my data, it's your data. I just hold it. They're not my numbers." And he very much took that approach. He came and sat alongside me when it was time for either budgeting or forecasting or any of those things that you need people to provide you the information and they don't know what you want. And it made such a world of difference because he helped me understand how it fit in. And also in turn, that helped me then interpret what he was providing so that it just joined it up so much more, that sitting alongside. So not only I think leadership and expertise in the finance function, and we talk about leadership from the finance function, and what that means is going and either really or metaphorically sitting alongside colleagues to broaden understanding from both sides and to bust some of those perceptions and misperceptions that otherwise really take root.
Maggie, I think your story shows the importance of those who make numbers relevant and bring them to life and how important that is across organisations. And we spoke about humility and curiosity in the first episode of this podcast, and it sounds like your colleague had plenty of that. So my next question really was prompted by a good friend and colleague of ours, Simon Hopkins, who mentioned to me a few weeks ago that finance professionals tend to be more on the introverted side and as a result, perhaps don't see themselves as natural leaders or perhaps struggle to make that transition into the more leadership roles. Has that been your experience or is that a bit of a myth? And a follow-up question, if a finance professional is stepping into a leadership role for the first time, what can they do to build their confidence and perhaps conquer some of that imposter syndrome that we hear so much about? Judith, what are your thoughts?
That's an interesting one. I'll let Maggie talk about imposter syndrome. That's one of her particular interests. I think it's quite easy to sort of generalize and label people as introverts, I think. And most of us are probably a mixture anyway. And you might be an introvert, but you find the energy somewhere to actually put your extrovert face or hat on, I think, when you need to. So I'm not sure I necessarily think in that way. I might have done quite a few years ago, but I try and avoid labeling people, I think, these days. I mean, maybe we are a bit more introverted, maybe in terms of, where we get our energy and how we think. And, it may well be that because of some of the analysis and that type of thing that we need to do, we might appear more introverted. But no, I'm not. I think I've got past thinking in that way. I'd be interested to hear what Maggie'd like to contribute really on the imposter syndrome thing. And I think we've probably all had it, haven't we? I don't think it's not just within the finance profession.
Yeah, 70% of people reported with imposter syndrome. And of that study as well, 70% women, 50% men. So there's that expression, has everyone got a touch of it? But I don't think everyone has. But it's more prevalent than we might think. And it's possibly more, I don't know if it's more prevalent or not amongst introverts because they keep it to themselves, of course, which is also the problem with this sort of research and data is the extroverts take part more. So we tend to hear more from them. I think just from the programs down through the years, when we anecdotally talk about introversion or extroversion, it tends to be something the participants bring rather than us. And there's a feeling that there are perhaps more introverts in the room when it's a room full of finance people, but not to the extreme. And just use it really as a way of exploring difference, back to what we talked about in the first episode, really, of that staying curious and what a gift it is to think of, okay, so I'm more, I think in my head and then I speak. How do I communicate with someone who thinks out loud? Or, you know, I think in a very linear way. How do I communicate with someone who doesn't do that? Or for them, what's important is the feeling stuff, and then they get to the thinking stuff. So all of this is useful in terms of what we talked about last time, really, the smoothing the way with leadership and easing those working relationships. So it's interesting and it can be fun. But certainly I get asked from time to time, can introverts be leaders? Yes, absolutely. Of course they can and are and have been ever since anyone started doing studies on leadership. Not to ignore the bits that we could be doing better, but really focus on the strengths that bring. And I think the strengths particularly do align happily with what we hope to get from a finance leader. You know, that very reflective style, the fact that when they share something, they've thought about it already, it tends to be clear. That's hugely valuable. And I think building on what Judith said, really, anyone who is either being tripped up by their imposter, which, by the way, I love this phrase, imposter syndrome takes root despite evidence to the contrary. So it doesn't matter that on a good day we know it's not true. It still gets in our way. And I think the best way past that, and indeed as an introvert working in an extrovert working world, is to focus on the work. Back to what we were saying about that nice finance professional who I'd worked with before, it was because we were both focused on the work. And that, you know, we can think of countless examples, I'm sure, when we come to that, of getting outside of our comfort zone because the work's too important not to. So that would be my top tip, is don't worry about how you've feeling about it. Focus on what you're doing.
That's really good advice, Maggie. Step out of your own way and focus on the work. I really like that. It sounds so simple when you put it like that. I don't know how easy it is in practice, but certainly that's great advice. Obviously, good communication skills are extremely important to master in any role, and I know that's part of the Inspiring Financial Leadership course too. Judith, what are the skills that you look for during your recruitment events?
It's all about sitting alongside people. And I think it's about being curious. I think that the ability to listen is a grossly underestimated or underconsidered skill. I think it's vitally important that you look for somebody who's business partnering and going out to sit alongside somebody, because we all know that finance is not everybody's cup of tea. You know, there's going to be a mental block in there potentially. So it's that example that Maggie used about how do you actually relate those finance tasks to where that person is. How can you engage them? And it's not about dumbing it down or anything like that. It's about listening, understanding where that non-finance person is coming from and engaging with them in their place. And I think it's also about having that appreciation and understanding that, I don't know, I may be going a bit off piste here, I don't know, Emma, but it's about saying it's not what I as a financial professional or can produce or the system can produce. It's what as Maggie said, it's other people's data. How can I present it in a way that's going to help and support them? So I think this curiosity, compassion and empathy about where others find themselves is a really important quality in a finance professional. And I would try and take a lot of the technical things for granted. But that recognition of engagement with people and how you communicate, that's the thing that lifts a great bean counter into somebody who can have business impact. And the other things you talked about, you know, what might you look for, not just in an individual, but in a team? I think, you know, we often see this as auditors. You go in and there's a finance team, but actually it's a group of people who are working together on the numbers. And it's really interesting, as auditors, we'll often ask questions and people will say, well, you need to talk to so-and-so about that, or so, you know. And the importance of building a great finance team is that actually everybody in the finance team needs to understand all of it. They might not be doing all of it, but as we all know, you know, it's double entry bookkeeping. You put a debit in here and the credit's going to hit somewhere else. So you've got to understand the implications of what I'm called, you know, the other side of the entry. And that's so important for people in, you need to build a genuine team. So sorry, that was a bit of a jumble of thoughts, but it's that being a partner, listening, communicating and understanding the wider piece right from the get-go.
Thanks, Judith. I can really feel your passion when you talk about this, which is absolutely great. Maggie, have you got any thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, obviously, I'm going to agree with Judith again. We keep doing this. It's why we've worked together so long. We do challenge each other as well, by the way. But you know, that you mentioned there, compassion, Judith, and that was, it was called Mark, the finance person who I keep talking about. That was what he had for me. At no point did he shame me, which I think non-finance people often feel shamed. And oddly, I was really good at O-level maths, but as a grown-up, I seem to get number blind. And he just sat with that. And you mentioned Simon Hopkins before, the finance journey that he created. We see the finance people on IFL eyes light up when they're presented with it as a useful framework to think about how they communicate with all these people who aren't number people. As a non-finance person, what a relief to see, you know, it's not just for finance people, actually. It applies for everybody, but what a useful communication tool for organisational life generally.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I would add, just talking about Simon, he comes along to the IFL course and talks about the finance journey, and one of the expressions that he uses is from that Disney film or Pixar film Monster Inc. And he uses the expression we scare because we care, which is a particular favorite of mine. You know, and it's about how do you balance, you know, communicating the reality of the financial situation, which can be unbelievably challenging, but it's doing that in a way where you have an understanding of the impact of the words that you're going to share, and you can do it in a way where the important messages land, but you do it in a compassionate way, and also you understand the likely reaction, and you've got a response to that as well, you know. And this is why on the IFL course we talk about, you know, the Kubler-Ross, the grief curve, which is the change curve, and it's, you know, you're as a finance professional could be further on the curve than other people. So it's understanding the impact of what you're sharing. The words of the finance professional in an organisation have a lot of weight, and you've got to be mindful of that.
I think that's a really important takeaway, Judith. Thank you. And actually talking about anticipation there, you've actually anticipated my next question, which is what can finance professionals who are aspiring to leadership roles do to actually get there? What are the skills that they should hone? Maggie, can I come to you on that one?
Obviously, there's IFL. I'm going to say that, aren't I? A big part of the program, though, is that peer network. And whether you do it on IFL, on any other program or community, you know, CFG is a huge membership organization with lots of events where you can go and meet people who absolutely talk your language and have the same challenges and understand things that only you can. What I've experienced in the past for myself and for others is when you're the expert in an organisation, the more senior you get, the more you have to talk to people outside of your organisation for your stuff, for your professional conversations, for your peer support, for all of that. It's not unusual as people get more senior that their support comes from out as much as in. So I'd say that. And again, Simon Hopkins says, doesn't he, find your tribe. Find who you're going to travel with. Don't try and do it alone. You don't need to. And it's not helpful to. It's good to think out loud, to bounce things off other people, to get topped up with ideas or questions or anything really that's thought-provoking. Know what works for you and go find it. That practical so what element of leadership comes through in conversations when you're talking about what's it like in real life. You can borrow from other people. You might not copy exactly, which you can, of course, but you can think about how might that work where we are, or how might that work for me. We need those conversations with others to get there. And one of the things that people report on all leadership programs, to be fair, is that that sense of gaining confidence around the people stuff, which we, it doesn't solve imposter syndrome, and it's not going to make introverts extroverted, but it helps with that expanding the comfort zone.
Thanks, Maggie. Yes, you mentioned Simon again, and obviously the finance journey is an integral part of the Inspiring Financial Leadership course. And it's really interesting that you say that non-finance professionals also benefit from that. I'm wondering, could you just tell us a bit more about that, please?
Some colleagues do hunt as a pack on IFL. So we do get people come along who aren't finance people, but they've decided it's a good idea to do it alongside their colleague. And what we sometimes get as well is the sister program, Outstanding Leadership for Non-Finance People. They run in parallel, and some people travel with their work colleagues on the either the same program or the partner program. So they're getting that shared language that they could, it's just helping that put it into practice
So
when you've
nice.
got someone with you.
That's really interesting, Maggie. I didn't realise that. It goes back to Judith's point about communication and having that shared language, doesn't it? Judith, do you have any final thoughts on what finance professionals can actually do to hone their leadership skills?
Yeah, I think the thing for me is Bill is that network of peers. I think that cannot be underestimated. And building it at the start of your career, not realizing you're in a senior position and thinking, oh, I better make some connections. It's establishing it right at the beginning, and then your group of peers will grow and change with you. I think the importance of external sounding boards, and they don't even have to be finance people, but predominantly finance people, because I think the point that Maggie's making is the more senior you get, and I see it myself as, a partner in an accountancy firm. You can feel in a vacuum from time to time, and getting other perspectives is so vitally important. And now I'm always learning from other people. And interestingly, we've been doing the IFL program a long, long time now. And I think the point is you can learn anywhere from anybody, and it's keeping that open mind. And every year, I think I learn something new. And I'm one of the course directors. I learn from the participants, just listening to them and their experiences. So it's not having any preconceptions about where the best learning space is.
I was reflecting. I think that's one of the reasons Judith and I have done the program for so long and enjoy it. We share that growth mindset, that love of learning. And that would be, I think, if you've got it, great. Feed it and fuel it in whatever way it takes. It doesn't all have to have exams attached, unless you live an exam and then go for that. But I think because as we, when you've got your professional qualifications, choose your learning, choose how you grow and challenge yourself in ways that you enjoy. That's one of the privileges of going through formal education, is as you get further along, you get to choose. And I think if that isn't you, look for how might it be. I've got a colleague here at the Centre for Charity Effectiveness at Bayes who uses the term incidental learning. And I know on the last podcast, Emma, you mentioned Ted Lasso. We love Ted Lasso, Judith and I. Oh, goodness, it kept us going through lockdown for certain, didn't it? But I sometimes, and I'm only partly joking when I'll say on a programme, oh, and watch Ted Lasso. That's a leadership resource that you need that for work. It's that incidental learning. A lot of sports people talk about leadership because people are interested in sport, and then they're quietly picking up leadership lessons. They're all around us. Choose what appeals to you, whether it's reading, experiencing programs, listening to things. It's all about, and often how we recognize that incidental learning is happening is if we reflect or in conversations with others. Like Judith said, we're always learning. We always, each module, I go away with notes of things that either I'd forgotten or that I hadn't heard, or I hadn't heard in quite that way before, or it sparks an idea for me that, oh, that's something we could develop for this, or that's something that would be helpful. I don't get that sitting by myself.
It sounds like you both really love still delivering the course, which is fantastic. What do you love most about the course, Judith?
So many things. I suppose in a part because it's distinctly different from, reading a set of financial statements, which I spend quite a lot of time doing, and it's specifically focused on the important aspects of that other side of things. It's not about your technical skills. It's actually how you can really lift your technical skills off the page and be really effective. And I love the opportunity to meet more people, bring some of these ideas to them, see them. You know, the reward I get really is seeing people reflect, think that the ideas and the tools that we're sharing with them are valuable. One of the integral parts of the program, every week we send people away with the tools that we've looked at, every month. And the first thing that we do in every session is we do this re-engagement piece where we said, okay, this is what we covered last time. You know, how have you been able to put into practice? What are your successes? What maybe hasn't worked well? Share them amongst yourselves. And I really love that part of the course, because I think that, and that's why it's so beneficial having the course spread over 7 or 8 months, is you have that opportunity to try things, reflect, try again. And it's building that habit of consistency into the sort of your day-to-day working pattern, because often we're so hard pressed to do that technical piece, get those papers out for such and such a meeting. We need to build reflection time into our weeks, into our months, where we're saying, well, how was that week for me? How was that month for me? What have in my toolbox, what have I tried to use? That appreciative inquiry thing that we're always talking about, you know, what worked well and how can I improve it next time? So those are all of the things that I love about the course, and the fact that we're not spending a morning, a month talking about numbers. We're talking about how we can actually lift those numbers off the page and be more effective. So that's what's exciting to me, and seeing people grow through the program.
Maggie, why do you still have a passion for the course?
That I believe it makes a difference. We talked last time about why I do this sort of work generally, and it's from sitting in the participant chair and hearing things that made my working life easier. I think, you know, life's hard, working life's hard, people are hard. The more that we can offer different perspectives and just different things to try to make life easier for performance and efficiency to go up, for well-being to improve, this stuff, we know it makes a difference. We might not know, and it's an important part that Judith mentioned, that the start of each program is a check-in for exactly that, because this is an iterative process. You take it away, you play, you bring it back, you learn from one another. A lot of what works, we never get to hear about, actually, because it happens like it happened for me. A big turning point that actually got me into this work happened 3 or 4 months after the coaching session that I'd had. And where the light bulb came on was I was clearing the M6 toll. You know, when everyone does the accelerating away and you feel like a Formula One driver for a moment there. The little light bulb went off that was linked right back to that coaching conversation of, oh, maybe I could try that. And it was, you know, it's when we're not looking directly at it. So, yes, I think that's the passion. It just, we know it works. Keep the faith, keep. And it's often the things that come into our minds that we hadn't necessarily intended to say, I know to trust that now and to drop it into the room, because I trust it's popped into my head because somebody's said something that has prompted it. So it will be useful for someone. And I think earlier in this part of my career, the number of times that people would say, oh, I'm so glad that you said that because it helped me with da-da, that I've let go of needing the evidence in front of me now. I just trust to be putting it out there. It's not tangible in the way that, you know, taking someone's temperature is. But if we don't allow ourselves reflection time, either alone or with others, and, you know, go for a walk, journal, whatever, however you reflect, wherever you have your good ideas is a good place to reflect. So it might be gardening or golfing or whatever you do. If we're not taking that time, we won't see the evidence because we're not being intentional.
I love that, Maggie, and I think that's a really nice note to end on. I think in our sector, I sometimes wonder if we've trained ourselves to look for and interpret and present the evidence rather than just sort of trying to trust the process and our own instincts. There's certainly a balance to strike, I think. I don't know, but I like the idea that we should trust that it just works. On that note, thank you both so much for another insightful and inspiring conversation. I really hope listeners will find it as useful and thought-provoking as I have. I make no apology for the love that we've shared for the finance journey and the Inspiring Financial Leadership course. It's absolutely wonderful to know that there's so much support out there for finance professionals who are looking to develop their careers and grow and learn. So thanks again, Judith and Maggie. And
Thanks so much.
I hope we get to chat again soon.